5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
When I had come down this hill, I had seen this creature cross the road. It would have ripped my locked door from my truck, extracted me from my vehicle, and there wouldn't have been a damn thing I could have done about it.
This thing, I got to notice its eyes. Its eyes was real, real evil, real sinister looking. The look it was giving me.
Seven, what would you report?
Jesus Christ, you better. Sheriff, see ya.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Welcome to Sasquatch Chronicles, a place where people share their encounters. Let's start the show. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. Got a great show planned for you tonight. Has anyone been watching the politics of this week? Yeah, me neither. Great show tonight. I'm just so burnt out on politics. Great show tonight. I got several guests coming up. My first guest, a lot of times when people are out there, I've talked to several hunters now. I've had a couple of them on the show where they talk about either hearing a conversation. Sometimes on rarer occasions, you'll hear hunters talk about hearing what sounded like two small children talking out in the woods. And it's very interesting. And that's what happened to my first guest. I'll be bringing him on here shortly. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. If you get a chance, please check out the website, sasquatchchronicles.com. We're going to, for additional shows, but we're going to be having some shirts and some different gear that's going to be available. I'm hoping right around the first of the month. As we get closer to it, I'll talk more about it. Spent a lot of time with the design, spent a lot of time making sure it was a quality product that's being put out. And I know I was at Beachfoot, kind of giving out some of the older shirts and just gauging what people thought. People seem to really like them. Beanies, even have stuff for the ladies coming out. So right around September 1st, look for that. Let's jump into it tonight. Bob, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And if you would, I know you had two incidences, and the one in 2013 really fascinated me. But before you get to that, would you mind stepping back and talking about the encounter you had in 2008? If you would, for the audience, just talk about where you were at and then walk us right into what happened.
Yeah, sure. So the first incident happened, so it would be in Otterdale County, Minnesota. That's kind of northwest, north central Minnesota. Mostly, it's kind of where the deciduous forest hits the prairie. It's for folks who aren't from here. And basically I was out bow hunting on some land my family has, and I had shot at a buck that was about 40 yards away. I was sitting, in a tree stand on the edge of a field. It was an old wheat field, but it had just gone fallow. So there was nothing in it. Just high weeds. And I was pretty sure I had missed my shot at this buck, but just as a matter of principle, I always go check to see if I hit something, see if I see fur or blood. And I got down, it was about that time of night where the sun had gone down, but there was still a little ambient light out on the field. I didn't need a flashlight to look for blood, but if I was in the woods, I would have needed a flashlight.
Yeah.
So some light on the field, but the woods were very dark. And I was crouched down, kind of following this trail the deer had followed through the field, looking for blood, looking for sign. And about then, the section of field I was at was pretty narrow. It was kind of a funnel in the field. That's why I was hunting it. It was only about 70 yards wide. And so I was kind of crouched down, and I hear this noise. I look up, and I saw antlers. I saw another buck, a nicer one, walking down the edge of the field. That would bring it at a line to about 30 yards away from me, which is, he didn't see me. That's kind of a bow hunter's dream. Big buck, 30 yards, doesn't see you, walking right towards you. So I knock another arrow, and I'm crouched down on one knee. My plan was to draw back, kind of get semi-lined up, stand up and take the shot, kind of surprise him. I recall I took a breath before I was going to draw my bow back. And right as I took that breath, I heard the like, I'm telling you, man, it's the craziest sound I've ever heard in the woods, right underneath where my stand was. So about 40 yards where I was crouched down. And it was like, this sound started at a lower pitch than I could make with my voice, almost like a rumble or a growl. And it rose in pitch and volume to a pitch and volume higher than I could possibly make. It started low and just sort of crescendoed up to this super high pitched sound. And usually with white-tailed deer, if they are startled, they'll stop, freeze for a second. They'll look at whatever their potential danger might be, and they'll typically decide to run, and they bound off with their flag in the air. That's, they get their name, white tail. But this one, this buck, the second it heard that sound, it was like got shot with a rifle. It just bolted, didn't stop, didn't flag, just ran like for its life as fast as it could. Didn't even take a trail to go into the woods, just crashed through the brush. And it left me on the field alone with something just screamed at me from 40 yards away. But then I was thinking, like, well, did I hear that wrong? Was it something I could identify that it's echoing? Or it was confused because it just wasn't registering as anything I'd ever heard. So then I was thinking to myself, okay, if it does this sound again, I'm going to try to replicate the sound. I'm going to make this sound again because I wanted to see what the heck was screaming out there.
Before you made the sound, did it sound like an animal? Did it sound like a person? I mean, what was your feeling when you heard it?
You know, I would have to say it sounded like an animal. Sort of when it was at the low tones, it was more of like a growl, very, very deep and guttural. But when it got to the higher tones, it was almost more like a voice, screaming, like a high pitched voice screaming.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. So you go ahead and you try it. You do you mimic what it does?
Yeah. So just about then it did the same sound again, but this time I was facing directly at it. And I remember I couldn't see it, so I wasn't making eye contact, but I was looking directly where this sound came from. And I remember it was so uncomfortable to hear that sound just blasting right at me. That actually, I looked down at my feet, like I looked away because it was uncomfortable. Maybe not so much physically uncomfortable, but just sort of really made me feel uneasy about being right there. But once it did that, I kind of composed myself again and tried to mimic the sound that it had made. And I tried it, but it sounded absolutely nothing like what I had heard. I don't think humans can make that sort of sound. But as soon as I made that sound, it snorted at me, kind of like a when a hog will kind of make a snuffle sound. It snorted at me and took off running inside the wood line. So where it was running, I was looking hard, but I couldn't see any movement. I could hear movement for sure. I mean, it sounded like somebody was driving a truck through the woods, just plowing stuff down and making this sort of snorting, snuffling sound as it just ran through the woods. And I could hear it for probably a quarter mile, breaking brush and just running inside the wood line. It was a pretty long field line that I was on. And it just ran off. And that was the last I heard of it. Just sort of left me sitting there feeling pretty uneasy about having to walk back through a swamp to to get back to my house. So,
yeah, I don't blame you. So it must have been big if you heard it breaking branches on its wall on, you know, as it's going out, as it's leaving the area.
Yeah, it did not sound little. Yeah, I mean, if you've ever heard like a big buck just crashing through the brush, it was far noisier than that. It had to be big, whatever it was, to make the noises like that and move that fast.
What did you think it was at the time?
You know, at the time I had no idea. I was not thinking Bigfoot at all. In fact, I was just really confused as to what it could be. I went back out there the next day with an AR-15 and a 9mm because it sounded big, whatever it was, and I wanted to see if I could find this trail. I figured, oh gosh, it must have left heck of a trail busting brush like that. And I only made it a little ways into the woods. There's a normal game trail that I knew about that ran inside that wood line. And I made it to that, kind of poked around there, but I just felt it wasn't even 12 hours later and I felt really uneasy. So I just backed out of there and left. I really didn't give it that much of a shot to find tracks. I didn't really care at that point. Just didn't want to be there. So.
I don't blame you one bit. It's interesting, the behavior. As you and I were talking yesterday, Bob, I've spoken to witnesses in the past that described, I was telling you about two of the witnesses I spoke to. One was screamed at, and then he said it made like what sounded like pig noises, like it snorted like a pig. And as he was shining the light, it stood up like a man and then took off running. And I always thought that was interesting, you know, a real unique detail you don't hear too often. And yet you heard it back in 2008. That's fascinating. If you would, tell us about the incident in 2013. I found this, we'll call it the weird hunting incident, but I found it fascinating because I'd heard it before. If you would, for the audience, would you walk him into that?
Yeah. And actually, it would have been fall of 2012, I believe. But what happened is I was bow hunting this time, this time in southeast Minnesota, which I don't know. I always had this idea that if there would be something Bigfoot related, it would be in Minnesota. It would be, you know, the far north deep woods or something like that. Really where I'm at, it's kind of really, it's like farm country. It was deciduous forest at one point, but now it's just pockets of thick forest and surrounded by farm fields. But, so I was on, it's about a square mile of, state, wildlife management land. And I'm kind of a bow hunting nut. I kind of live for that in the fall. So, I was out in this area that I had scouted. Basically, it's a river bottom, so it's a kind of a flat, muddy area just with some brush growing in it. And then right on the other side of this, well, maybe not a river, it's like a creek that floods, there's kind of a high bank. It probably goes up 6 or 7 feet with a thick row of trees on it. And beyond that, there's an old field. And so I was up in this cottonwood tree, bow hunting right on the edge of this creek. And I'm sitting there and it was late afternoon, early evening. There's still tons of light. I could see just fine. About, I would say, if I had to guess, I'd say at least 400 yards away. But at that distance, it gets a little hard to tell for sure, but I know it was at least that. I just hear out of the blue what sounded like a man, like a big, big man with a very deep voice, just kind of, just this, like, this scream. Like, initially it registered to me that either somebody was, had just gotten very, very injured or was really, really mad. And it startled me enough that I started to pack up my gear because I thought, gosh, if somebody is out here and they got really hurt, I ought to go see if they need some help. Like, the way they yelled, it sounded either really mad or really in pain. But then I kind of thought about it again and I thought, well, gosh, where it came from is just a thick forested river bottom area like where I'm at. And I just heard this scream one time. I'll have no way once I get over there pinpointing where this is or anything. It's not like you had very good visibility where it came from. And just about then, as I was kind of playing out in my mind what I should do here, a doe ran out of the brush in that general direction, out onto the field that I could see, several hundred yards, I guess it would be west of where I was sitting, and just came running straight out and then turned and ran the length of the field almost all the way down to me, like straight at me. Before it got to me, it turned and went broadside and then turned back. So it kind of made like a big three-quarter loop. And where it ended up, it was in the middle of a field in some thick brush, only about maybe 30 yards from the trail it had come in on, or just made. So essentially it was what I could see is trying to watch its back trail. It made a big loop and it was watching what would come behind it. And it ended up bedding down right there in the middle of the brush in that field. And I just thought that was unusual. I thought, oh gosh, maybe I'll get to see some coyotes out here. Who knows what will be following it. But I thought that was weird behavior for that time of day. Usually they'd be getting up to go feed and get some to drink, but it's just out running around and trying to hide itself.
And did it come in the direction of the sound you heard?
It came from the direction I heard, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
I gotcha.
It, like where the deer came from was the exact same direction as the sound I heard. Just there was kind of a thicker clump of forest over there, and it just came busting out of that.
Was there at any point when you heard that noise that you thought, okay, that's not a person? Or the whole time you're thinking, I think that's a person?
No. Initially, it registered as a person just because it sounded like a voice. But, I mean, I've spent a lot of time outside. That's kind of what I do. I mean, I've climbed Mount Rainier two times. I've lived in Alaska for a while. I do what I can outside. Yeah, it's fun.
Mount Rainier is no joke.
No, it's fun. It's just you're gonna have to work for it. But in all that time out there, I mean, you just get this understanding of when there's something that's 400 yards away in thick forest. I just don't think if I was yelling, my voice would really carry that far to where I was, but it was loud. It was like, I think louder than a human would probably be able to yell.
And so what happens next?
Well, so what happens next is that the evening just kind of wore on without incident from there until kind of the same, as the first incident I talked to you about, where the field was semi-light, the sun had gone down, but the woods were black, just jet black behind me. And I'm just sitting there waiting for deer. And in the brush to my right, which if you follow the edge of the field, attaches to where that loud scream came from, I heard it, what sounded like little kids, like a couple little kids, little girls, I would say specifically, just like giggling and kind of talking over each other and just back and forth. Like I'd hear one sort of little, like it sounded like talking, but no real words. Like if you're too far away to hear words, and it's just a voice. But I was probably only, I would say 50 yards from them down this creek. I could hear them chatting, kind of talking over one another. And it just freaked me out. Like the hair on the back of my neck stood up and I was like, what the heck are little children doing out here in the dark? And what was even weirder is they weren't going like out of the land. They were going deeper into the thick part of the woods behind me. And I heard whatever these things were walk through the water, through the creek. I heard them splashing. I could hear brush moving. But like I say, it was black in the woods, so I couldn't see anything. And I heard the kind of giggling, chatting sounds three times. I would say maybe about, I wasn't counting, but if I'm thinking back, I'd say probably about 10 seconds apart. As they moved across the trail I needed to take to get out of there, and just moved off farther back into the woods. I think if I were farther back in the woods, I probably would have even heard it more. It was like little girls having a giggly, chatty conversation walking through the pitch black woods and through a creek.
Yeah, and you wouldn't think that would be disturbing, but as you and I talked yesterday, I've had other witnesses on the show that talk about that. And I'm glad Brian sent it to me. It was episode 152 where he talked about that. And I believe, if my memory's right, Brian's up towards Mount Hood. And the area he describes, is, as you and I were talking yesterday, it is a very, very, very remote location. Brian knows what I'm talking about. Little kids are not going to be up there giggling and laughing. I mean, it's like the middle of nowhere. And that's what freaked him out about it, is it sounded like, and I think he described it, and I'm sure Brian will correct me, but I want to say he described it like Russian kids talking. He couldn't quite make out what, he could tell it was some sort of conversation, but he couldn't understand anything they were saying. Did it sound like a language? I mean, is that kind of what it sounded like as you perceived it, as you heard it?
Yeah, it did. I mean, it didn't sound, you know, I told my dad about it at one point, and I think he had said, well, was it, you know, raccoons make kind of a chirping sound. I was like, no, I know what raccoons sound like. That's not, it wasn't raccoons. That was not it at all. And I was telling him, like, well, if that's how I'm describing it, I've really failed at my description, because that's not what I heard. It definitely sounded like intentional. It wasn't just animals making a little, like, chipping sound or something like that. It was intentional noises. And they were talking over one another. One would start, and then the other one would kind of bust in and go over it, and then the other one would do the same. And it didn't, if you had to place an emotion to it, it didn't sound angry. It just sounded like, you know, voices chatting back and forth, little kid voices walking into the dark. And it really freaked me out, because then I got down and I had to walk across that same creek, and then I had to cross the trail that they would have come on to get back out to my Jeep. And that, usually I walk out without a headlamp or anything on and try to be a little stealthy to not disturb things in case I want to come back and hunt in the morning. But that night I had my light on, I had an arrow knocked on my bow. Not that I necessarily felt that would be able to do anything really, but maybe just for my own mental state. If I had a weapon, I wanted it loaded.
What did you think was going on? I mean, in your mind, I can imagine if you truly thought these were two little kids in trouble, you would have called out to them and said, hey, do you need help? But obviously there was something going on in your brain that wasn't clicking. Otherwise, you know, I mean, for the most part, every hunter I've come across, if you're in trouble in the woods, you run into a hunter, generally speaking, you're going to get all the help you need. They're going to help you out. And if you'd have known it was two children, I would imagine you would have called out to them. But how were you perceiving it to where you're thinking, I'm not going to call out, I'm going to wait till they leave, and then I'm going to get down, load an arrow up, and walk back to my truck?
Well, you're absolutely right. I was actually, at the time, I was a social worker for kids. So I kind of would have been like violating my own job if I thought kids were in trouble and not helping them. I don't do that any longer, but at the time that's what I did. But, you know, it did not seem like human. Like when I say it sounded like little kids talking, that's like the best, I guess,
best way to describe it.
Yeah. Like the best way to describe what I heard, but it did not seem like, oh, cool, there's just a couple of, little kids hanging out in the woods or something like that. It definitely, something about it was not registering right. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation, but I've heard you and your brother's encounter, so maybe you can resonate with this a little bit. But even though the situation, in hindsight, you think about it, it's like, oh, it nothing really happened. You know, it was okay. But in the moment, all that you can really think is like, I'm screwed. This is not a good situation. We got to get out of here. Like, there's just something kind of primal in your body telling you, like, get out. This is not good. You do not need to be here.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, and it's more or less questions for the audience. Believe me, I get it. I completely get it. That would have freaked me out. And I realize it's really a non-threatening type sound, but that would have freaked me out. I mean, I probably would have got done the same thing you did. Wait till it passed by, got down, and then I would have left. I'm going to be having Greg coming up here shortly. And Greg talks about almost an identical same type of encounter that you had, Bob. And he didn't really want to talk about it because he never really saw the thing that was creating the noise. But he said it sounded like a bunch of little kids giggling and talking over each other. He'll come on and tell a story. But I think it was the same type of situation. It's fascinating. And I think the one that probably screamed at you might have been the mother of the group. And I'm speculating.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I know skeptics of this sort of thing would say, well, you didn't see it. You didn't see what animal made that sound. And they're right. I didn't. But, you know, at some point, enough of the same people say the same stuff. It's like, you know, in Alaska, if you hear a bear, you don't need to see the bear to know there's a bear there, you know? And you still act the same way. I'm getting out because there's an angry grizzly right there. I don't see it, but I hear it, so I'm leaving.
No, you're right. And same thing. I mean, even out here in Washington State, you'll hear cougars way more than you'll ever see them.
Yeah.
To actually see one, and they're infested out here, but actually to see one is kind of rare. But you'll hear them all the time. You'll hear them scream, and you know right away, okay, a cougar's in the area, a bobcat's in the area, a bear's in the area. But when you hear something like this, it's like, well, what is that?
Yeah.
You know, so, and you know all the animal sounds. I mean, I'm not going to even insult you with, could it have been a fox? Could it have been a, because you know. I mean, you know, when you hear that, especially the vocals coming your way and then the weird chatter, it's, you know, I'm not going to insult a hunter by asking him that, so.
Yeah, I agree. I found it since I was a little kid. And even before I did, my dad would take me out and just let me sit with him. And so if it was a fox, well, I would have said, well, neat, I heard a fox tonight. You know, that wouldn't have startled me at all. I live out in the country now, and we see and hear stuff like that all the time. But in all the years I've been hunting, those are kind of the two incidents where I'm just kind of left scratching my head, like, what the heck was that? You know, after hearing a lot of other people's encounters, it kind of encouraged me to call in or email in to sort of say, like, hey, I think I've had some stuff like this happen to me too. So,
no, I'm glad you did. And thank you so much for sharing it. I actually posted part of your story to the blog, and I got a lot of emails from it. A lot of people were saying, hey, you know what, this guy's talking about this strange voices and chatter and what sounds like kids. Well, I've experienced that too. And so, no, I appreciate you coming forward with it. It's a creepy story, man. That would have creeped. I can't say I wouldn't have done anything different. I would have slowly moved out of the area too, as well, like you did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Bob. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
And it looks like I had planned on having Greg coming up on the show next. He just sent me a message saying he'd be unavailable. Greg, we'll follow up with you next week. Not a problem at all, buddy. Thanks again for hanging out on hold. Let's jump to Mark and his 13-year-old son, Richard. Mark, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here tonight.
Hey, no problem.
And I know you and your boys had an encounter, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to Richard, one of your boys that was there. But prior to your guys' encounter, gosh, well, not even 9 days ago. Prior to that, you had mentioned there were some odd things going on and around the property. Where, in what state is this located in?
This is in Tennessee. We live in a small town about 35 miles north of Chattanooga. The encounter happened about, probably within 5 miles of our actual residence. But there have been other strange occurrences that happened at the site of the encounter and also at the residence, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, how far back, date-wise, did some of the odd encounters take place?
1986.
And if you would, just kind of describe some of them. What were some of the strange things going on around there?
Well, the very first one in 86 was in the same area that the encounter happened in. And what this is, it is a state park. In fact, it connects further to the northeast. It connects up with the Appalachian Trail. And it's very, very thick forest and whatnot. It's got a a river that runs down from the mountain and it comes down through the valley. It's really nice. But anyway, a friend of mine and I had gone camping at this place, and, you know, back then they didn't close the gates at night, and supposedly the urban legend was that was at nighttime, you know, all the devil worshipers and all the weirdies would come out at this place, you know, and do their rituals and whatnot. And I guess every town has an urban legend like that. But we went camping up here one night, and we went about 5 miles off the trail. And I know that in this area there are black bears. There's wild boar, all kinds of deer. There's mountain lions. There's even some kind of species of a black panther that the TWRA still denies that they exist. But anyway, so what we did, we had made a perimeter of, like, noise-making booby traps. These things started going off, and we had a pretty good fire going. But we never could see what was setting them off. And so we're both armed, and we're thinking, okay, this is weird. You know, this is just really weird. Who's, you know, who's messing with us and stuff? Well, all of a sudden, that's when rocks started being thrown at us. And we figured, okay, maybe we got too close to a moonshine still or worse. And so we decided to leave. And there was something paralleling us back to the car. I don't ever remember, not even in the military, doing a 5 mile hike that fast. But anyway, we ended up, whatever it was, it freaked out my buddy, and he fired on it. He didn't see what it was or anything. He was just, you know, firing a warning shot or whatever. And we figured, okay, it's going to go away now. Well, it didn't go away. And it paced us all the way back to the car. And, of course, we hightailed it out of there. And so that was the end of that night. Neither one of us made any kind of connection with that. We didn't even talk about it ever again because it was just, you know,
very
really
strange,
way
yeah.
out there. Yeah. So I spent a lot of time off and on up there. And now that I think back on it, you know, you'd hear wood knocks or something like that. And I figured, well, maybe that's just, you know, a dead limb pounding up against the trunk of a dead tree or something. I mean, I never made the connection of it being Bigfoot. And so I ended up, because I'm originally from Los Angeles, and I moved back in 88, and I ended up joining the military, and then I came home in 94. And so, excuse me, anyway, I ended up getting married and stuff, and we moved back up into this area. And then what started connecting the dots was where we live now, there's a ridge at the end of our street. And if you were to go straight up that ridge, straight down the other side, you would run right into our old house. And it was nestled pretty much in the tree line, starting at the tree line, and it was at the end of a game trail. And one night, my wife came home from the store, and she said, hey, come out here and listen to this. And so I went out on the porch. And I swear, coming from the woods, you could hear a woman screaming bloody murder. So I called 911. And 25 minutes later, we get a deputy come out. And I'm telling him, you know, what I'd heard and everything. And he's kind of looking at me like I lost my mind. I said, listen, I'm former military police. I'm not crazy. I know what a woman screaming sounds like. And I'm telling you that there's a woman up there in trouble. And he finally agreed, okay, well, because there was a neighborhood up there. He said, okay, we'll go check out this neighborhood. And so that was that. Well, the next morning I got up and I thought, man, there's just something not right here. And I had this old hound dog who loved to hunt. And I put him on his leash, and I was going to take him up into the tree, up into the woods with me. We got to the edge of the tree line. This dog goes flat on his stomach and starts yelping him like I'm just beating him to death. And I'm like, what is the matter with you? So I took him off his leash, and I told him to go home, and I went up there by myself. And I started right off the bat getting that sixth sense that, you know, something's about to happen. There's danger, hairs on the neck standing up and whatnot. I was feeling like I was being watched. And that's when I got a whiff of the smell. And it was the same smell that hit us when we had our encounter the other day. I misspoke in my written report and called it raw crap. And people have been giving me grief about it, but what I meant to say was kind of like raw sewage.
Yeah, no, I know what carcass. You meant. No, I know what you meant. I know what you meant when you said that. It's...
Yeah, it was absolutely horrendous. But what I did, I ended up coming home, and I started talking to people. I talked to a game warden up here, and he was telling me, well, I don't know what that could have been, and I don't know of anything that makes that kind of noise. So I got on the internet, and I started listening to known vocal recordings of known species and unknown species of animals. And I ended up wandering onto the BFRO site, and they had a recording of that Puyallup. Is that how you say it? Puyallup scream?
Puyallup, yeah.
And that was an exact duplicate. And I was like, oh, no, this just can't be. There's no way. I mean, there's no way. That's out west. Those things are out there. They're not out here, you know. And so we started having strange things happen after that, like at night when we would let the dogs out. There was something very big and very bipedal that was inside the tree line at night, walking around, and it was so thick, you know, you could be 15 or 20 feet away, and you would never see this thing. And that was sort of unnerving.
Yeah, it's very unnerving.
You know, you would, my wife refused to take the dogs out at night anymore. She said, I'm just not doing it. You know, after dark, forget it, we're in the house. And something would come up and slap the trailer at night. And still, you know, I'm not putting all the pieces together. And again, I stumbled on the DFRO site. And there was a report there from the county we live in. Lo and behold, there's this guy who filed a report. And from what he described, it was the exact same spot we were in 86. And he wakes up in the middle of the night, and he sees two of them standing there. In his report, he said that he went into the tent for his gun, come out, they were gone. And so he just did what a sensible person would do, went back in the tent, went to sleep. You know, of course, I'd be up like, no, ain't no sleeping for me, you know. But anyway, so that's what kind of opened my eyes, that you got to be kidding, you know.
Yeah, you started looking back at all the past things that had happened and started making sense on what was going on. Well, tell me about this encounter with your sons. What were you guys out doing, and walk us into what happened?
Yeah, we went to this area because, you know, it's been so dang hot here. I mean, it's just been so miserable. And the water there's usually really cold, so... The three of us went up, we took our two English Mastiffs with us, and, you know, we went swimming. And, you know, what's strange about this whole encounter was there were people there. When you enter the parking area, there's a couple of places that are shallow of a descent enough where you could go down into these, I call them little pools and whatnot. So we went into the very first one that you could enter. And, you know, so we were there for a while, and all of a sudden I started smelling that smell again. And I didn't say anything. And my son Richard, you know, he asked his younger brother, he's like, "You smell that?" And he's like, "Yeah." Well, they kind of ignored it. Well, my younger English Mastiff, she was sitting with me, and she would go to attention looking across the river about 30 feet in toward the tree line. And she wasn't barking. She didn't act afraid or any of that. She was just at attention. And then our other Mastiff actually swam to the other side, and she kept wanting to go behind this boulder that was probably, it's huge. It's really huge. It's probably about the size of a house. Richard wouldn't let her go. You just kind of have to know Rosie, because she's off in her own little world. We didn't think anything about it. And so we're sitting there, and all of a sudden we hear this crackling sound. And we look up, and about 100 yards south of our position, lo and behold, here's this tree, a nice-sized pine. It's going over. And as it's going over, it's breaking into three different pieces. I'm looking, and I kind of see movement, and nothing's really registering at this point. I'm just thinking, wow, okay, this has got to be just the tree that's died and it's going over. Well, then I saw movement, and I looked, and just inside, there's a tree line right there. And you know how if you're looking in from light to darkness, the shadows can kind of mess with you a little bit.
Right.
And that's what I was thinking. This is just too weird. But I could see a figure that was kind of, I don't know how to describe it. It was going from tree to tree. And it was kind of, you know, it'd get to another tree and kind of peek around, and then it might go back to the tree that it had just come from and done the same thing. And so I'm like, no, this isn't happening. Well, all of a sudden, there was movement out of the corner of my eye, and lo and behold, there's one standing there as plain as day, probably about 40 feet away. He had his back to me, and he was walking away. And the parking area there, it's probably about 50 feet wide. And he had that thing cleared so fast. I mean, I can't sit here and tell you how many steps he took or anything like that, because I couldn't see his legs. All I saw was his upper torso. And I can tell you he was big, though, because my truck from the ground to the top of the roof is like 6'4", is what I measured this morning. And he towered over my truck.
Let me ask you. So you see this tree come crashing down in one direction,
mm-hmm.
and you think you catch movement of something kind of dodging in between trees, and you turn around, and there's another one 40 feet away?
Yep. And that really, I can't tell you how much that messed with my head, because I don't know. It just, like I said, I listen to your show and all this. I try to get as much information as I can. And the only thing that I've really learned after all this time of learning about them is we don't really know nothing about them, you know? And for one to make him, these things, they wanted us to see them.
Well, I think in that situation, because that isn't uncommon. You hear some witnesses will say that. They'll say, like, almost like a diversion is being created, something to draw their attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's enough time for they didn't realize there was one behind them, or they didn't realize there was another one off to the side that is now retreating after the diversion. And it's interesting because you hear witnesses say that. They'll get rocks thrown at them. They'll stop. They'll look in that general direction. And then they'll kind of look back, and there's something retreating away from them. And I think that they do that. I think they do this diversion, you know, complete divisionary tactics to make you focus your attention over here so that my buddy can get away over here. I mean, I've just heard it too many times from witnesses. The one that you saw, how would you describe it? I mean, it's, you said that it was 6'4" above to the top of your truck. How much taller do you think it was, and what did it look like? I realize you saw it from behind.
Well, that thing had to have been about 2 feet taller, because it came, the roof of my truck, at least the angle where he was, it came to like maybe the top of his rib cage, maybe the bottom of his chest cavity. And I mean, keep in mind, I'm looking at this, you know, I'm looking at his back and just kind of looking at where the side lined up is what I'm trying to say. And, you know, it was over my truck by a couple of feet. So I was guessing between eight and a half feet easy. And the way that, well, like I said, I saw it from behind, but it really reminded me of a bodybuilder, kind of. And the head was, you know, had the cone-shaped head, but it looked like it didn't have a neck. Like, the head was just, I don't know, man. It was kind of weird. Like, the head is just, you know, popped on top of the shoulders, you know, super glued or whatever. I don't know, but it looked really strange. It looked like it was reminiscent of a giant gorilla walking upright. I mean, that's what it looked like to me from behind. I wished I could have seen the front.
And that's interesting, because he was retreating away from you at the time, too.
Yeah, see, and that's the part I don't understand, see, because this is where it gets really strange. See, just up the river in the next pool is full of people up there, and it was maybe only 1,700, 1,800 feet away from us. But I wasn't taking into account the thickness of the forest absorbing sound. You know what I'm saying? Like that old saying goes, you know, if a tree fell in the forest, nobody around, would you still hear it or whatever? I really don't think they heard that tree go down from where their position was from us. I think that, you know, the forest ended up absorbing all that sound, because you can't even hear traffic on the road, and the road is, you know, right there.
Yeah, especially if there's water nearby, or if they're swimming, or you're right. I mean, and I know that from here in Washington State, you get within, you know, 20 feet of we call them rivers out here, right? Basically small creeks. There's so much sound, you really can't hear. I don't know that I would hear a tree fall 150 yards away, because a river picks up that sound, or in the area. And you're right. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is sound does bounce around a lot in the forest. So what happens next? This thing walks off, and then what do you guys do?
Well, you know, when it gets kind of even weirder from there, because when this thing crossed, my son Richard, he says, "Dad, did you see that?" And I said, "Well, I think so." That's all, I mean, because I was still trying to, you know, absorb what I couldn't believe what I just saw. The time of day that I saw it, and like I said, there are other people here, but I mean, I know that wasn't any person. And so when that thing crossed, every instinct within me was saying, you know, you really, really need to get your boys, and you need to get out of here. But then I thought, well, wait, I need to give this a couple of minutes and let this other thing get out of the way, you know. Because at the time, I mean, I didn't know what I was dealing with, and I didn't know what this thing was going to do. So after a couple of minutes, the dogs go back to attention, and they're looking over there at that dadgum boulder. And all of a sudden, we thought it was a motorcycle at first. And I just kind of looked at my son, and he looked at me like, that was kind of weird. Well, then it did it again, and it wasn't no motorcycle. It was a growl, and it was a big one. Again, I'm still trying to grasp what I'm hearing, and it did it one more time, and this time it was really, really something out of hell. And that is what really got my butt in gear, because I said, okay, we're going home now. And that's what we did. We hiked our little butts back up the trail toward the truck. And when, as we got closer to the truck, is when my younger English Mastiff, that's when she started acting kind of nervous. And we started hearing these calls coming from the direction of that boulder. And we weren't, you know, again, this is another strange part. We weren't far from that boulder. We were within, we were probably under 100 yards from that boulder. But those calls, you know, the forest absorbing a sound like it does, I guess, it sounded like they were really far away. We bolted out of there. And, you know, it took me a while to really, you know, believe that my mind wasn't screwing with me, because, you know, my other boys saw it too. Both my kids saw it, and or saw them. I don't know if they saw both or just saw the one, but, you know, and then you had the one behind the boulder, and I'm just kind of wondering, did we wander into something? I mean, were there young involved, you know, or something like that? And of course, I'm thankful it didn't turn out worse than it did for us.
Yeah, no, it's hard to say. It sounds like you were in between two different creatures, and so that, you know, it's all intimidation to make you leave. That one that plopped out really fascinates me, though. I really think it was a diversion tactic to make them make you look this way while this one gets away. It sounds like you guys were just kind of stumbled into the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, that would be about par for the course with my luck. But, you know, the one that walked away from us, another odd thing about it, didn't hear a sound out of it. I mean, nothing. You didn't hear, you know, feet touching the ground. You didn't hear any kind of grunting or any, I mean, there was absolutely nothing. And I was thinking, wow.
I've always been curious about that, because I always wonder if the creature is actually not making any sound, or, you know, a lot of times when our adrenaline rises, sometimes other senses will kind of, if you ever notice, like in a car accident, you don't really hear anything during the car accident. It isn't until afterwards, yeah, or right before the car accident. But during a car accident, if you talk to a lot of people who've been in crashes, they don't really hear anything during the, I almost wonder if it's that adrenaline gets pumped up, and then that's one sense you don't need at the moment. You need your legs, you need your eyes, and you need to be alert. And so there's, and that's just my guess. I could be completely way off on that.
Yeah, that, I tell you, the whole thing was bizarre. I mean, I'm pretty sure that these things aren't the lovable little tree creatures that we hear about, you know, from other organizations out there. But
I think it's a highly dangerous predator, and I think it's nothing to be played around with. I think it's a very intelligent predator, but it's a predator nonetheless, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and what kind of woke me up to that was I was thinking to myself, you know, I didn't hear a sound come out of this thing at that close range. I could imagine how all these folks, it's not hard to put together how they disappear. I mean, they can't even hear these things come up on them, you know? And I'm pretty much have come to the conclusion that they see, or you see what they want you to see, and you hear what they want you to hear. And, you know, they're the masters of the hunt, if you will. And I don't know. I don't want to come across one in the dark alley, so to speak.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing the encounter. It's not the easiest thing to come forward and share something like this, you know, because it is so, you spend so long, especially after an encounter, questioning yourself and, God, did I really see that? Did we really experience that? Did Richard want to come on the show?
Yeah. He's been looking forward to talking.
Oh, cool.
You want me to put him on?
Sure.
All right, Wes. Well, it was good talking to you.
Hey, thank you, Mark.
All right, buddy. See you. Hello.
How are you, man? Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. I'm good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Sounds pretty terrifying, the whole experience you guys had.
Yeah.
What did you see?
Well, we get there, and instantly, I had an eerie feeling that we were being watched. But I didn't pay any attention to it because I just thought it was people, because there were people there. And we get to the small pool, and we start swimming. After a few minutes, my younger brother gets a whiff of the smell, and he asked me, "Do you smell that?" And I said no at first, because it took me a couple minutes to notice it. And then when I caught the whiff of the smell, it was like raw sewage. It wanted to make me gag. My dogs went to attention. The older one, my English Mastiff, Rosie, she kept trying to get to the other side of the pool. There was a couple times I let her. We'd go over there and stay on the shore. One time I brought her over there, and there's like the shoreline. And on the right, there's this big boulder about the size of a small house. And on the left is like a small little platform. And I took her to the left, and I sat on the rock. And she sat with me. And then I sat up for a couple minutes, and she sits up, and she starts circling me. And I thought that was weird because I've never seen her do that before. So I bring her back down to the shore, and we swim back to the other side of the pool. We're sitting there on the rocks looking at the water, and I hear this loud cracking noise. And I look over, I see this old tree falling down, and it's as it's falling down, it's breaking into three pieces. I look at my dad, and he's sitting there. He's got a amazed look on his face. And I hear him say, "Get down," or something. So I sort of hunker down behind a rock and just start looking around and stuff. And then I start seeing movement over by where the tree fell. I couldn't see anything. I just saw, like, something moving, the brush and stuff.
Yeah, like shadows and...
Yeah.
The bushes move, yeah. No, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah. And then from the corner of my eye, I saw something large and black. And by the time I had turned my head, I could see just the tip of the head disappearing behind the hill. And I turned and looked at my dad. I said, "Did you see that?" And then... Couple minutes later, me and the dog gets back in the pool, and we start swimming. I hear this loud grunt, sort of like a roar, you know? At first, I thought it was a car coming up the road, but then there was another one, and I looked at my dad, and I asked him if he heard that. He said, "Yeah." And then the growls kept getting more and more frequent. And it wasn't just one of them. It was two of them because I could hear some growls coming down the river. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, scary. You know, it's cool. I get what you're saying. You know, when you're in those situations,
yeah.
You're terrified and you are curious. You're in amazement. It's like you get you get the rainbow of emotions and you're not really sure what to do. But, it is. I mean, you've experienced something many people out there wish they would have experienced. But I didn't mean to cut you off. So what happened next, Richard?
My dad says, we need to get out of here. So we get up to the parking lot, and he says, "Look for footprints or any physical evidence," something like that. And I found something in the gravel, but I couldn't tell because it looked like somebody had dug their heel in the ground and started moving it around and stuff. But we moved on, and by the time we got to the edge of the truck, I heard a call coming from the opposite side of the river. I turned to my dad and I asked him if he heard that, and he said, "Heard what?" And then right after I said that, we heard another call.
What kind of calls you hearing?
It was like a whoop call.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah. And then the younger Mastiff, she starts getting a little, nervous. So we get in the truck and we drive off. And we came back this morning to take measurements. We found one tree that was actually pushed over and twisted. but it was a bent at like 7 feet high up in the air. It was bent over and twisted, and it was fresh too because there was still leaves on it and stuff.
Well, do this for me. Be careful when you're out there, will you? I mean, I realize,
yeah,
you know, you're 13. You got way more courage than I had when I was 13, but. You know, be careful when you're out there. You know, pay attention to your dogs. Your dogs will give these things away like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah.
They'll, when you start seeing your dogs start pointing in a general direction, you know there's something you need to stop and pay attention to. And the other thing, which I don't think you would do because you kept your cool through this whole thing, is never run. If you ever come across one of these things like you did, I know a lot of people, they want to run. Don't run, but back off as quickly as you can, but just try not run in those situations.
Yeah.
I would imagine this sparked your interest, huh, as far as these things out there?
Yeah. And this wasn't the only and first encounter I had either. I mean, not like this, but there are, like, calls and stuff.
Yeah, that's what your dad was talking about. You guys hear him around that property and... You hear him vocalize. Is that kind of the stuff you've run into in the past?
Yeah, I sometimes once or twice every like fall, I'll go out and do a couple wood knocks. Very rarely, I'll get a response. I'll get either a wood knock or a whooping call. So yeah.
Well, yeah. Be careful. Like I said, you know, I know it's fun, but you know, keep in mind this is a very large predatory animal.
Yeah,
that could turn on you. So be careful when you're out there. I like your style of research, though. I like the fact that you and your dad go back to the place where you had your encounter. Very few people do that.
Yeah.
And you got your eyes and your ears open out there. What do you think Sasquatch is, Richard? And there's no wrong answer.
I'm not really sure. I think it's like a cross breed between an ape or something. You know, I'm not really sure.
Until there's disclosure and this actually comes out, you know, it's hard to say what it is. But I tend to agree with you as far as what they are. Well, Richard, thanks for coming on the show, man. I really do appreciate you and your dad sharing your encounter. It's something you'll never forget. You know, when you're an old man like me, you'll still look back. It'll be fresh in your mind. And I'm sure you'll be telling your kids and your grandkids about it.
Yeah.
You know, I really do appreciate your courage coming forward and sharing it. Just thanks for being here, man. Thanks for listening to the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome, Richard. Thank you and thank your father for coming on the show. Thanks so much, guys. Let's jump to Stephen down in Texas. Stephen, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, you're welcome, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you being here. And for the listeners, they know Steven from past episodes. He's down there in Texas. Does a lot of research. And I know, Steven, you had sent me your website, which is lonestar-ape.com. And it's a cool website. I actually went to it a couple times, and I'll put it in the link for this show. But is there any encounters on the site that you wanted to go over? Did you want to talk about why you created the site?
Well, I'll tell you right now what actually got me creating the site. I had a couple of friends in the area and everything else that actually had heard me be on the show before. And that when they realized I had an interest in everything else, they started to back up. I honestly had never done any research in the area out here. I was focusing mainly on East Texas and South Texas, that area. I just didn't think we had much of a history. And through these friends and everything else, they're like, oh, well, have you heard of this? And have you heard of that? Did you know about this? And that got me started. Come to find out, started digging through the newspapers and the old news articles and everything. There actually is a fairly interesting history in this area, one that I had not been aware of. Finding new reports has been kind of hard. I've been focusing mainly on more historical, well-documented reports. For one of them I'm about to talk to you for a second, the Caddo Critter, for example. It took place back in 1964. And this was just a weekend that a little town went berserk. I mean, that's the best way you could call it. Referencing that with another one I ran into, the Holly Hymn, that took place in the 70s. And then I started coming across a lot of articles around various towns of the Brazos River, examining the Brazos River sightings and everything else. When I started plotting them out on a map, from, and we're talking historical, we're talking from like 1880, 1870 on up to today. When I started plotting out where they were, I started noticing that almost all of these things were in some way, shape, or form associated with a river or a tributary of a river in that area. You can divide Texas up by its river systems and everything. And most of the sightings, not all, but the vast majority, are probably within a mile of one of the major rivers or one of their tributaries.
I had noticed that on the website. You'd put that together beautifully. Shows a map, and what I noticed, started looking when I was looking at a lot of the stuff on the website is, you're right, as you go through the river systems, the encounters really are not far from those river systems, very close.
No, they're very close. Almost every time I found an encounter, if it wasn't on a river, it literally was, well, let's just zoom in the map, and oh, there's the creek, you know, and there it is, 5, 6, 7, 8 miles later, it's joining the river. It's almost as if I'm looking at a road network, and that's the hypothesis that I'm basing this part of the site on, is that they are, for these animals are transporting or traveling, whatever, up and down the river and water systems. I don't know if that's going to hold true in East Texas. I'm really honestly trying to stay out of East Texas. There's enough groups and enough sighting information and everything else that East Texas is very well documented. West Texas doesn't have a whole lot. Also, West Texas is a much drier climate. We're routinely in drought every year, even when it's like this year, just flooding and everything else for us. You go out there and we still look like a desert in a lot of places. I mean, we're still cracked earth everywhere and all of that, and we're nowhere near drought. My point being is, all of the wildlife tends to follow the river and the tributary systems. Because of the environmental system that we have, with the fact that we have drought pretty much routinely, everything is confined to near the rivers, it seems. I think that is why it is so obvious in this instance that all of the sightings seem to be associated with a river or tributary. Yes, we do have the occasional oddball that happens to be 10 miles from the nearest water, especially in far west Texas. Usually, though, when that's the case, even with the oddballs, if you follow your satellite imagery and you can watch, yes, the stream ends here, but the flood gully and everything else that you can see eroded in the environment, it continues on. And it will still be near where that sighting was. And so even after the water ends, it's like they are still staying in these travel ways, and they're going up and down. And with the sightings I've had, like I said, going back to the 1880s practically, this has been true over time. It's a consistent phenomenon.
And I noticed you got on here, Damn Dirty Apes. That's a nice touch. I appreciate that.
I have always, ever since I heard you utter that term, I've always been rather, just fond of it. So, yeah, I've tried, I realize the audience that I'm writing to, because I'm writing this site mainly, the primary target is going to be a West Texas audience. And these people, because what I'm wanting more information. I'm wanting people to say, hey, yes, I had this encounter, I've had this sighting or something, and to let me know, hey, it happened here, and it happened at this location and this time. To do that, West Texans are a little bit of an oddball bunch. So I've kept, especially the opening of the site and everything else, yes, we're serious, but I'm trying to keep it a little bit of a, not a lighthearted, but kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing. Yeah. Something that they're going to be amused and entertained reading, and then, well, like you said, you get into the first or second pages and yeah, this is interesting. This is great. Wow. But then you start getting into things like the river systems and things like that. And you realize there is so much more there than what it initially was.
Again, it's LoneStar-Ape.com. Tell us about the cattle critter.
All righty, the cattle critter happened in July 18th, 19th of 1964, approximately. It happened in Caddo, Texas, which is this little, little cow town that is east of Breckenridge. I'm going to classify it as north central Texas. It'd be north of I-20 today. But it would actually be between the town of Breckenridge and Possum Kingdom Lake. It's a very remote area, relatively. There's no industry, nothing like that. In 1964, it was all cattle land. That pretty much was it. I mean, there were farms and there was cattle. That's all we had here. Population, as far as I can tell at that time period, was about 100 people. We're talking a very small, tight-knit community. The first incidents of note is going to be on July 18th, 1964, and it's going to be with Gene Couch. Gene Couch was a 9-year-old boy. He was walking to his fishing spot about 200 yards away from his house, evidently. And he saw this animal standing near in the bushes. You've got to understand, the terrain that we have in this part of Texas, we're talking scrub oaks and mesquites. The average, I mean, this really, you walk out here and someone who lives where you're at, you're going to say, how nice, y'all have bushes. We literally, our trees are like 10 to 15 feet, and that's it. We're very stunted. Like I said, it's a low water environment. Tends to be fairly thick. A lot of briars and a lot of brush, but nothing tower trees or anything like that until you get to the river and the tributary areas. Those areas, and this is where I suspect, if I understand correctly, this is where an area that he was in, those areas tend to be much larger oaks and pecan. Tree height starts going maybe 30, 40 feet tall. Anyway, he's walking towards his fishing area. He's got his fishing pole and everything, and he's just doing what little kid, 9-year-old boy is going to do when they go fishing. He's not paying any attention, and evidently he almost runs into this animal. And the animal stands up, it growls at him, scares him. He goes running back home, tells his mother and everything. Word gets around the community. At that point, the newspaper articles pick up the fact that the sheriff, Sheriff Booth in the area, states that he started getting calls from around the area. He's had multiple people that have reported seeing this creature. That night, my favorite little character of the whole thing, Charlie Gant, this is a little 71, I believe he was a 71-year-old man. I swear he's got to be the role model for Dirty Harry. I have a picture up on him on his site. It explains everything about hilarious. That man. Yes. His picture says it all. Charlie Gant, that evening at his house, had a run-in with this creature. It evidently looked at him. It growled. It was basic Sasquatch event type thing. It, you know, shook the bushes, and then it disappeared. Really kind of unnerved Charlie Gant. He had not seen anything like that before. This was new and outside of his normal experience.
Did Charlie mention what the creature looked like or how many times he shot?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Charlie said the creature had to be at least 7 feet tall. Yeah, it had to be 4 feet wide, and it looked like a gorilla. Now, that's very important because little Gene Couch didn't say 7 feet tall and 4 feet wide, but he described the animal he saw as a big gorilla.
Did Charlie kill it? Did he say that he killed it? Or
no, Charlie did not. Charlie did not. And you see, you're sitting here because I'm trying to do this I'm trying to do this in the order of events as it happened. That same day, we had another woman and a son who also reported while they were out walking them seeing the same thing. We do not know the name of the mother and son. They were just anonymously reported in the paper. That was Saturday the 18th. Sunday the 19th comes out. The only report we have is Charlie Gant again. This time he's out behind his house. Sometime during that evening, Charlie Gant sees the creature again. He describes it as making a ruckus and everything behind his house, and we just have to interpret what that means. This time he had his .22 revolver. And I love this because Charlie Gant felt, yeah, his exact quote was, "I risked my life to save this community." This, what he calls a 7-foot-tall, 4-foot-wide, angry gorilla, he decides to shoot at and empty his revolver at. This is a little 22 revolver, had 9 or 10 shots, and he emptied the whole thing at this animal. He did not kill it, didn't do anything. It just went away, according to his words. That was the last known report that we have had in this instance of the Caddo critter. So if he did do something and it goes off and it dies, we don't know. We just know that of this incident, that was the last time someone directly saw the creature. And that was Sunday night, the 19th of July, 1964.
Yeah, in the picture you can see Charlie holding up his 22. He sure is proud of that gun.
Oh, yeah. I was about to say, that tells you everything you need to know about that old man right there. You don't mess with him.
Yeah, 72 rancher, you know, that's mm-hmm. He's old school right there.
Very much.
I think it's interesting, too, as you read some of these witness reports, they all say ape. A lot of them say ape. It was a large ape.
Yes, they very much do. One thing that I think is interesting about, as the week went on and speculation grew around the town of what was going on, the most prominent thing that got pushed by the newspapers was that this ended up being an escaped yak from a wild animal preserve that was around the Possum Kingdom Lake. I beg to differ. We have a community of people here that are all, I mean, Charlie Gant's a cowboy. You look at him, you know what he is. Okay. These people, ranching and farming is all they do. They're going to know the difference between essentially a hairy cow and a gorilla. A yak looks like a hairy cow. It's a type of bovine and everything. That's not what these people are describing. These people are describing something that is upright, that is walking. It looks like a gorilla. It throws rocks, you know, things like that. It's classic Sasquatch behavior that they are describing.
Yeah, and it's kind of offensive, I would imagine, to say that something like that to a rancher. You know, well, he saw a yak, and he's telling you he saw an ape. It's kind of it's kind of offensive, I would imagine.
Well, and here's the thing that I feel that does not hold water. The man who ended up pushing the whole yak story, he was a rancher, and his story was the yak had gotten out of the Possum Kingdom area and had ended up spending the winter with his cattle in his fields. And then he just noticed it got up and disappeared one day, and he's put two and two together and says, well, y'all must be seeing that yak. I know a couple of ranchers. My father-in-law's a rancher. He runs cattle. And I can tell you for a fact, they don't like other people's cattle or animals getting into their herds or on their land, especially over the winter, because the food is kind of sparse and everything else. They know each other. They know everybody in the area. When someone's cattle eventually goes over the fence, they take care of it. They remove that animal. They take it out and everything else. I mean, this is their livelihood. The fact that this man is saying that, yeah, I just, you know, it showed up during the winter and was eating, you know, was hanging out with my cows all winter long and everything else, that just doesn't seem right. Not for the people I know around in this area.
And Charlie would have, being a rancher, he's not going to go out with the .22 and start blasting away at a yak. I mean, that just doesn't even add up. I mean, he would have known.
No, it
that.
Does.
I think probably what happened, and I'm just theorizing on probably what happened, he was startled by this saying. The only thing he had was his .22 revolver, and he opened up because he was scared. It terrified him, is why he opened up on the thing.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know a lot of people in this area, especially a lot of the older guys, even today. They carry .22 pistols and everything else as just a general utilitarian tool. You know, I mean, it's a perfect snake gun is what it is. More often than not, that's what they're using it for, is to kill snakes. And so that's just what they carry. It's probably all he had on him. And for the fact that he felt like he used that weapon and emptied it out that small, I think, honestly, he's right when he says, you know, he risked his life. He feels like he really did. He you know,
that was not
a normal thing for them to do. Yeah, you know, I mean, because I'm sure he felt like, you know, he did not have an adequate weapon. You know, so the image I'm seeing of this event has got him backing up as he's shooting, you know, because he's going back to the house.
Oh, I'm sure he is. And I think it's fascinating, too. This is 1964. So this is several years before the Patterson-Gilman film. And here they're basically seeing, he's basically describing Patty, 7 foot tall, 4 feet across, and it looks like a gorilla, and I shot it 9 times. I mean, really, he's describing Patty for the most part.
Yeah. Oh, and there you have, I mean, there are so many reports that echo this same kind of thing that I've come across with. I've got one here. This is from actually Liberty. I'm sorry, Terrell, Texas, which is now part of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Okay, this one would go along with the Trinity River system, actually, which runs across it and then runs down. It's what I consider my eastern border that I'm looking at right now. But I've got a report here from 1903 that is actually talking about a one-eyed wild man. And in the earlier pre-1950, most all of the reports are referring to these things as wild men. Okay. That evidently was the term that was being used at that time period. And this one was described as being an extremely tall, one-eyed, nude, and hairy all over. And when the people saw it, it got up and walked in the other direction, and the people ran. You know, but I mean, even back in 1903, it's still the same basic description.
It's interesting. It's like the guy I had on Friday, and he was talking about his encounters in this particular region. And if you look up even like the BFRO, and he was talking back, I believe, back in the 70s. But if you look back at the BFRO during that time, all around that area, there's other witnesses that are describing exactly what he's seeing. So it's fascinating when you take an area like West Texas and you can pull these. It's like I've always said, whenever you try and do historical accounts on, if you look up Bigfoot or Sasquatch, you'll find stuff up until about 1960, they're talking about it, or 70, they're talking about it. But if you start looking up Ape Man or Corn Man or Wild Man, I mean, you'll get endless and endless reports from these areas.
They go much farther back. And I've tried, and especially when I did those river system maps, I tried to include those sites. And wherever I could actually roughly nail down a location and everything from the report and everything else, I've put in those historical reports. I mean, we have reports that are going back to that time period that are now in essentially downtown Fort Worth in that area, that at that time of the, you know, at that time was the very outer edge of town. You know, it was literally the boondocks and you were back on the trail and everything else to go wherever. And they're still being reported back then. And it's interesting to see, as the city has moved out over the years, the reports, they don't stop in frequency, but they follow the edge of the city.
Yeah, it's really interesting you say that out here in Washington. You're right, and you can look up the reports, because this area grew really quick back in the 80s and 90s. And prior to that, you know, like when I was a kid, a lot of areas around where I'm at, you'd see a lot of farm fields. Well, you don't see any farm fields anymore. And as you go farther north, like you're heading towards Seattle, you hit battleground, you can almost look at the reports. And as the area grew out, the reports backed away from civilization.
They do. They retreat.
Yeah, they retreat. But it's not too far off from civilization. If you would, I know there's this other story on here, the Holly Hem story. Why was it called the Holly Hem? Was that what they were calling the creature?
That's what they were calling the creature. The kids who saw it, they just referred to it as him. And I think it was, we saw him, you know, he was there, you know, that kind of thing. I have yet to be able to dig down enough to get the detail of why it was called him. I think it was just a generic him. I've got a lead on talking with one of the primary witnesses, the girl that was in that encounter. And I'm gonna dig on that a little bit more. I'm gonna find out exactly, well, you know, what led to the him. You know, what is it that got that name stuck with it? I suspect a great deal of it is probably the newspaper, and they're just looking for catchy phrases and everything else. Because I see this again and again. I mean, with several of the creatures that have been reported over the years in our area. I mean, we've got the Haskell varmint. We've got the Holly Hym. We've got the Caddo Critter. You know, we've got the Wild Man of the Brazos, you know, things like that. You're seeing sensationalism come out in the reporting, I believe. And so they're just catching catchy phrases and everything else. And this goes back, you know, to like what we were saying earlier. They weren't reporting on a huge scale. They weren't putting Monster A over here with Monster B over there and necessarily putting it together, hey, these might actually be the same kind of thing. Everything was extremely localized, very much within a community and all of that. And so, you know, that's what we've got. Holly has its monster. Caddo has its monster. And that's where I think that's really where the names are coming from is more. It's the, probably the reporters. The kids were just described. Yeah, the kids were just describing, yeah, I saw him over there. And he did this and all that. And the reporter said, oh, the Holly Hym, you know, that kind of a thing.
Tell us about this one. So this one's in 1977. And I noticed the witnesses were describing a 7 foot tall, four feet wide, hairy, and they called it a wild man. But give us the cliff notes of this encounter. It was three boys that saw it, three teenagers.
Yeah, it was. Let me verify. It was two boys and a girl, if I remember right. What we have is you had two boys that were actually from the boys' ranch in Abilene. And this is interesting in its own right because I had no idea this organization actually went back as far as it did. The boys' ranch is essentially for troubled youth, things like that. It essentially gives the boys a place to go. I don't want to say it's a boot camp or anything like that, but it's a place where boys go to get kind of straightened out. Anyway, these two boys were working on the administrator of the boys' ranch. It was the administrator's private ranch. And they were clearing some grassland and brush out of the way, out towards the rear of his ranch. Essentially, the boys saw this animal again standing in the brush. It had approached them. It growled. The boys were kind of shocked, didn't know what to do and everything. And then it started pelting them with rocks. One of the boys got hit in the leg, got a pretty decent bruise, I understand, from it. At which point the boys took off and they ran to the closest house, which actually ended up being the McFarland residence, if I remember right. And there was an older girl there. These boys, I think, were about 14. The girl was 16, if I remember right. She accompanies them back out to see what's going on, thinking that okay, maybe we've got a mountain lion or we've got a coyote, something like that. You know, not believing the boys, but she grabbed her 30-30 rifle. In the meantime, her parents go ahead and call the sheriff and everything else. Anyway, they go back to the site, and the animal is still present in the area. And it makes itself known. It starts growling, throwing rocks again at them. I have not yet heard any reference to any howls or shrieks or anything like that. I'm like I said, I'm trying to track this girl down. She's still in the area. But anyway, when they see it again and it starts behaving in the way it does, she takes aim and then for whatever reason decides she can't shoot it. And so she hands the rifle over to one of the other boys and says, here, you shoot it. He shot at it. It is very much unclear whether they actually hit it or not. The boy had to be not that large or he wasn't used to handling a rifle because they make note that the rifle knocked him clean down from the recoil. And so after he stumbled, he got up. They departed the area again. My understanding is the animal also departed the area. That's pretty much most of what happened in that particular episode. There were one or two little reports, people claiming they saw him here or there. the usual stuff, the sheriff's office being inundated with reports, things like that.
And she's still alive, correct?
Yes, she's still alive. I'm working on right now trying to track her down to see if I could get her an actual interview and get a first-hand report directly from her. The interesting thing is the hysteria that this sighting caused and the few others in the community. Again, Holly is very much, it's a little bigger than Caddo, but it's the same kind of situation. Even today, I think it's only got about 1,200 people in it. It's a very small, tight-knit community and everything. A couple of miles over, we have a community, Merkel, who ended up having a couple of animal slayings that happened. And we're talking about animals being ripped apart, you know, throats gouged, you know, pulled out, legs and arms pulled off, that kind of a thing. Primarily goats and chickens. That's only about maybe 7-8 miles as far as the crow flies from Holly. And it's hard because when they say you have farms in this town, that farm may be 5 miles outside of that town. That's just the way it happens in Texas. But everyone was still blaming this animal that they saw on Holly on these animal killings and everything else. These animal killings were not a usual event. And so that animal ended up getting blamed for it, even though there is no direct evidence that it actually did those things. No one reported any unusual tracks or anything like that. We just had the unusual animal killings that happened, and they put two and two together. So far, I haven't been able to dig up more on that. I'm hoping to do so.
Yeah, I hope you do, too. Those kids are lucky to be alive. Those three kids, you know, popping off a shot, then, you know, having recoil knock you on your butt on your ground. I'm sure that's the last place that kid wanted to be after that he pulled the trigger. But I'm really surprised that with how aggressive it was. And then you hear about these animal killings. Now, did anyone see the creature do it? No. But it's not hard to put two and two together in a situation like this.
Yeah. And this is the thing. Again, it goes back to, you know, we have this animal puts on this display. It's trying to not, you know, for whatever reason, it's trying to get these kids to leave the area. That much is, to me, is obvious because they did leave the first time. And when they returned, the animal was still there. And so, therefore, again, you know, the animal didn't move. The kids did. And so the animal, you know, is just as aggressive when they came back. And even after they fired the shot, I'm assuming they did not hit the animal. I think if they had actually hit the animal, especially if something as large as a 30-30, we probably would have been having a different story at the end.
I would love to talk to the female that handed the rifle to one of the boys. I almost wonder why she couldn't pull the trigger. I'd love to ask her that question because there's a lot more to that story.
You've got the magic question. That's the one I want to know, too, is what is it that stopped her from shooting that gun and all that? I can take a million guesses, but you're right. I want to get that directly from her. And when I can, I'm going to get that. And if I can, I'm going to direct her over to you. So,
yeah, I was going to say, do me a favor. If you talk to her, bring her on. I'd love to talk with her. It'd be fascinating.
I will do.
To hear her take on it. But for the listeners out there, it is lonestar-ape.com. Steven from Texas. Steven, you did a great job putting it together. I highly recommend
it. I appreciate it.
Go check it out because it is. It's really cool. You can click on the links, open the newspaper articles. You can look at the maps. And there's a lot of really good. It was very well put together. And so.
Oh, well, thank you. It was the miracle of WordPress. What can I say? Yeah, we've got the site. We have I've got an accompanying Facebook, primarily there just to try to help promote the site and drive some interest into it. People are more than welcome to come and check either one out.
Yeah, is it just Lone Star Ape? Is that what they look up on Facebook?
Yep. They can just go on if they're on the primary site. They can just click the Facebook link and it takes them right to it.
Well, perfect. I appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much for. Sharon, I love hearing the older stories and building such a great website. There's a ton of information on there. So, again, it's lonestar-ape. If you get a chance, go check it out. Thank you, Stephen.
Oh, you're welcome, man.
And that's it for tonight, everyone. Remember, if you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email, Wes at SasquatchChronicles.com. Look for Sasquatch Chronicle gear coming up around September 1st. I'll update you guys as we get closer to it, but it should be up on the website, SasquatchChronicles.com. Until next time, everyone, have a great night. Little wiser.